Are we on?
No, not yet. Just kidding, we are. Hey, this is John Horsley and Kenrick Regan with the Spoiler Country Podcast. We got a couple corrections. Before we start anything, we should probably correct the fuck-ups that I did last time, because it was all me.
Oh, no, I did one too, so it's just not all you.
Well, I'll do but the two that I had. So, my stupid ass said that Amazing Spider-Man 121 was the first appearance of Punisher. It's actually 129. 121 is the death of Gwen Stacy. I don't know why that slipped my brain.
Well, I knew you were wrong, but you were so adamant that I was
You know, even at the time, I was like, this doesn't sound right, but I couldn't. I was like, oh, yeah, 129. That's Gwen Stacy.
Can't let it go, Kenny. You can't let it go.
Couldn't. And then I also credited Kurt Busiek with writing Kingdom Come, and it was actually Mark Waid.
I thought you said Alex Ross wrote Kingdom Come.
Yeah, he illustrated it, and he also helped write it, too, as well, with story ideas. But it wasn't Kurt Busiek. It was Mark Waid.
Gotcha. I need to get that. At least download the trade paperback and read it.
It's so good. It's so good. And there's even in the background of some of the scenes, you'll see cameos from like Spider-Man and Thor.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, hey, Alex Ross.
But it's a DC. DC.
It's a DC book, but it's not. Yeah. It's not official cameos, but you can tell who they're supposed to be.
Right. Right. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So one of our lone listeners pointed that out, that Johnny was wrong. So we appreciate that. So anytime we're wrong, guys, just go ahead and anytime we're wrong, just let us know, because we don't, you know.
Yeah,
we're not going to fact check on everything.
We're human.
Also, I can't say that Captain America was a clone. I honestly didn't read it, so I don't. Someone told me that. That's what happened.
I don't know what happened.
Back,
I didn't read it.
Well, I went back to confirm it, and I can't find anything that says that he's a clone. So I can't say that he's a clone because I haven't read it.
For the Secret Empire storyline?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone told me that they said he wasn't a clone, that he's definitely not a clone, and then a month later it came out that he was a clone, and they were mad about it, but I was like, okay, that's legitimate. But then when I went to go look for it, I couldn't find it.
Yeah, I haven't read that, so I don't know how it ends, but also I kind of don't care.
So on the last episode, I said, you got to read Craven's Last Hunt. Did you read it?
I finished Craven's Last Hunt right before we pushed record, pretty much.
Yeah, and what's your initial reaction?
My initial reaction is did you ever read Superior Spider-Man? The storyline where Spider-Man or Dr. Octopus's brain went into Spider-Man's body and he became Spider-Man and Peter Parker died, quote unquote. And Doc Ock in Peter's body decided he was going to become the superior Spider-Man, the better Spider-Man than Spider-Man was.
Oh, okay. No, I know they had a storyline where they switch brains or something like that, but
yeah,
every time I hear that, I think of vice versa.
Yeah, that's very new, but this made me think of that because Craven's whole point was to be a superior, even uses the word superior Spider-Man in that storyline a lot.
That's probably where they got the initial idea.
Right, yeah. Where
well, at least influenced.
Definitely, because Craven does become a better Spider-Man than Spider-Man. Well, I mean, in his mind, at least.
You know, it's funny. Did you read that article I sent you about this whole story?
I didn't read it, because I hadn't finished the story yet.
How do you say his name? Lin Wein?
Yeah.
You know, he initially pitched it to somebody at Marvel for Wonder Man. And they were like, no. And he was glad that they did that, because the story wasn't fully formulated and he wasn't ready to do it. And then he went and pitched it to DC for Batman, where his whole concept was like Joker accidentally kills Batman and the experience is so profound that it makes him sane.
That'd be an interesting story.
Then of course, you know, he comes, you know, Batman's not dead and it breaks him again. But Alan Moore was working on the Killing Joke.
Oh.
So they said no. And then he pitched it again to DC.
To Marvel.
No, to DC again.
DC again, twice?
Yeah, yeah. For Batman again. And it's in this. The whole thing's in the article. And
it wasn't Len White. It was John Mark Demantis.
Was it Demantis? Okay.
Yeah, it was Demantis who pitched it to him and stuff.
Yeah, and then finally he went to Marvel was like, yeah. And then they had a new character they wanted him to be instead of Kraven. But then when he read up on Kraven, he was like, it's got to be Kraven. He just fits the mold.
Right.
And man, he really fits the mold for that story. I can't see it being anybody else.
No, neither can I. And that's what I liked the best about it is it was barely a Spider-Man story, you know.
It wasn't. It's a Kraven story with Spider-Man as a supporting character.
And you see, that's the kind of stuff. It's like we talked about this whole, like, you know, last time, the renumbering of issues and the restarting of series and stuff like that. And this is why I don't like that, because you have this great Kraven story in The Amazing Spider-Man that, you know, if nowadays that would be a one, you know, a one shot or a mini series or something else outside of the main story or the main comic right. runs.
Right.
Whereas here, people who are reading Spider-Man, they're buying their monthly comics and they're getting this, like, this great story that's Spider-Man based, but, you know, has more to yeah. it that yeah. you wouldn't get today, because today it's all, you know, everything goes to a mini series or they reboot all the time.
Well, I felt like it. When you read that story, you can feel, even though it is all about Kraven, we've already gave away the ending on our last episode. But when you read it, you can feel the character depth of Spider-Man changes. It becomes deeper because right. the guy is sincerely scared of what's going on. You know, it was life-changing and for his character. So I thought it was cool. It was like, you don't see that. You don't get those many stories that do that very often. Not
no,
to that
too
level.
Busy. They're too worried about, honestly, I think the big two are too worried about making money than telling good stories. I mean, yeah. With that being said, I mean, they still do tell good stories, but the bottom line nowadays is, and it always has been kind of making money, but they're so worried about making the most bang for their buck. They reboot, they make number ones, they do special covers, they do variants, they do special issues, they do
right.
miniseries this, miniseries that. And it's like, come on, just pick your core comics, make those comics, tell great stories, people will buy them.
Yep. What'd you think of the art?
The art was fantastic.
Yeah. Who was the illustrator on? I don't think it was the same guy through all of it, because they arced that across all the titles that Spider-Man had at the time. Amazing, Peter Parker, and Web of.
Yeah, I think it's the same, because I'm on Wikipedia, it credits the penciler as just Mike Zeck, one guy.
Yeah. His
the art was fantastic.
Yeah, it was so good. When
the first thing I commented on was, wow, the art in this book is great.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when you sent me the Facebook post, you're like, or the instant message, you're like, wow, the art is ridiculous.
I've seen these issues before. You know, I've seen these covers and collecting and, you know, going through comic boxes forever. I've always seen these covers and always thought they were really great, but never read it.
Yeah,
right. But no, the art in throughout the whole series was just phenomenal.
Yeah,
spot on.
A lot of times you get a book and the art inside doesn't match the art on the cover, and that could be a multitude of things, like different artists or whatever. But most of the time, the art on the cover outperforms the art inside. Can I say that?
Right.
Legitimate, but this is not like that. Though everything through it is, there's large enough panels that you're like, that could be the cover if they wanted it to be. Like the to me, the shadowing of Kraven with the gun in his mouth, when you don't actually see the gun in his mouth, you just see the shadow of the lightning striking in the against the window. You know what I'm talking about? And it's all in black, and it just looked. I was like, that's conveying the message. Better than just seeing it full bore, like it's right in front of you.
Oh, and there's so much great storytelling in just the art. Like there's a part of me that was while reading the book, and that while reading the, you know, the whole thing is really filled with Kraven's thoughts. There's tons of dialogue narration boxes of Kraven, and for some of those pages, part of me was like, well, even if these boxes weren't here, you wouldn't really need them to follow what's going on, because the pages are telling such a great story.
Right.
And to some degree, I did think towards the end, like, well, these boxes, there's a lot of narration boxes going on. I think it was a little over narrated at some points, but it was good. It was a really good story.
I'm glad you liked it. I wasn't expecting
to kill at the end. I wasn't expecting to kill himself at the end for some reason.
Even though I told you in the last episode.
Right. Well, to be honest, I forgot.
Oh, I thought maybe you were thinking, oh, he's lying to me. He just set me up to
No, I totally forgot.
Watch a movie and say, oh, yeah, he dies at the end. And and it's like a movie that you're like, this could plausibly happen. And you're waiting and waiting. And then the movie ends. You're like, you dick.
Well, it's like when I saw Star Wars Rogue One. I didn't expect the whole cast to die.
I know. I was kind of disappointed by that because I wanted another movie with that cast.
Right. But it doesn't make any sense because that movie goes right into episode 4. But yeah, I kind of expected someone to make it out.
They didn't have to be main characters of the main storyline, but they could have survived getting the plans and dropping them off, and then, you know what I mean, and be available for other adventures.
Right.
Not part of the arc of Luke, the Skywalkers, because that's all that really is a Skywalker story, right?
Right. And that's Rogue One is the first non-Skywalker story, but they're still coming in.
Yeah. I mean, that whole movie, though, the payoff was Darth Vader at the end.
Oh, that scene. That scene almost didn't happen, too. You know that?
Really? How can you not have that scene? When you see it, you're like...
That scene was shot last minute, and it was a last-minute addition saying, okay, we need... I think we should put some more Darth Vader in the movie. Okay, let's do this. And then they added it at the end.
Well, I'm so glad they did, because I don't think I would have liked that movie half as much without that being there.
That scene was... Yeah, that him just cutting the guys down with the lightsaber, just throwing them in the air.
Yeah, it was so cool.
He being a badass without being a ninja flipping around like in the prequels.
Yeah, I like how we always go off on tangents. But to put a bow on it, if you haven't read Kraven's The Last Hunt, it's on Amazon Kindle for like $3.50, trade paperback.
Oh, damn.
So you can read it right off your Kindle.
Also, if you have Marvel Unlimited, I think it's one of the stories you get with Marvel Unlimited, too.
Yeah, I think there's like 20,000 different titles or some crazy like that, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, I kind of want to subscribe. I kind of want to sign up for that. Just so I have a bunch of books.
Yeah, we'll fact check that one, but it's a lot of books. But definitely, if you haven't read it, it's one of the best Spider-Man stories ever told, I think.
Well, it's best non-Spider-Man story, because it's really about Kraven and the backup story about Vermin, which was...
One of the greatest stories that involves Spider-Man ever told. and Vermin was a great addition to it. I mean, he was creepy and he's eating people, and it's like,
and like what got me is the way Kraven used Vermin in the last or in issue 5, to kind of seed his point to Spider-Man, basically saying, "Look, I bested the Beast. I'm going to release him and you're free to go and I'm not going to hunt anymore. You're go do your thing. Like, I'm better than you. I did this. Now shove off."
Right. It just took him like, you know, what was it, 20 years to do it?
Right.
I think, was it Kraven's first appearance? I think it's Amazing Spider-Man number 15. So that would be like, what, 64, 65, somewhere around there. So that, and I think that was 1988, 1987.
Yeah,
so it took him 27 years.
Spider-Man 15 when he first appeared, yeah.
Yeah. So,
it took him a while.
It took him a while, yeah. I mean, Spider-Man could be like, whatever, dude, I bested you like 100 times, but, you know, 1 out of 100, okay.
I'll give it to you. And you still didn't kill me, so.
Yeah. But it was, dude, the scene where he shoots Spider-Man after getting him in the net.
Right.
And he's like, what are you doing? His face is different. He's, you know what I mean? You're just like, it's coming, and I remember being like 13 years old and I was a huge Spider-Man and fan at that time. You know what I mean? That was what I collected more than anything else.
Right.
And I just remember seeing that scene going, I almost thought he really killed him. you know, even though, you know, he's not really killed him, you know what I mean? Cause it's Spider-Man, it's Peter Parker. But at the same time, you're like, it was done in such a dramatic fashion in such a great way that, you know, I would do that as a movie and call it Kraven and make it rated R, because you can't have that scene. You can't have that last scene with him and not have it. It's too violent. And plus the whole concept of Vermin eating people, it's too violent. You have to be rated R. It's not about the language, because you don't have to have any language throughout the whole thing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's with the violence on there. Now, if they made a movie out of it, like the best way to make the movie and have it be, you know, good,
I wouldn't even call it a Spider-Man movie. I'd call it Kraven. No.
But what you'd have to do is you'd have to have Kraven introduced in a Spider-Man film, right?
Yeah.
As a character. And then after, you know, have Spider-Man 2, you introduce Kraven as a secondary character somehow, right? And then Spider-Man 3 comes out. Then you release Kraven with Spider-Man. But it doesn't really matter for Spider-Man, because it's mostly going to be all Kraven. I mean, Spider-Man's going to be in the beginning and the end of the movie. That's it.
Kind of like how you used Batman in Suicide Squad.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but a little bit more, because he is, I mean, it's kind of funny, because Kraven becomes the protagonist and Spider-Man the antagonist during that whole struggle.
Right.
It's all in Kraven's mind.
The movie could be good. They'd have to do less narration of it and more...
No, you could do it totally like Gumshoe style, like the director's cut of Blade Runner, where you hear Harrison Ford narrate the movie as a Gumshoe, and you could totally do it. And I mean, obviously he's not a Gumshoe, but I mean, you could do it in that style of narration, and it would work. I think it would work, because you have to hear those inner thoughts.
Yeah, you do. I mean, you're right.
Because he goes through and
they kind of build up to the end, like without those
and they
thoughts,
build up the whole thing. You know that something's going to happen, because if you go back, being older now and reading it and not having more of an understanding of what he's saying, you know, he talks about his mother, and they're saying that she was insane and that she killed herself, and he's saying that she didn't, but really she probably did kill herself.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because to him it was an acceptable exit. You know, the funny thing is you can feel that Kraven feels like Spider-Man is his greatest enemy, and Spider-Man's like, whatever, dude, you're not even Doc Ock, you know?
Yeah, you're not even top 10, man. Come on, get out of here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and but then now at the end, you can tell that the way they conveyed emotion so well in the art that you could feel that what Kraven was saying at the end of him being submissive in a way kind of made sense.
Yeah.
Like, I completely bested you in everything.
Right.
You know,
and to him, even though he, you know, even in the end, Spider-Man goes off and Kraven is laying in a coffin, Kraven in his, well, his mind, or what's left of his mind, he shot himself. He won, you know, he got what he wanted. And so he won. It's interesting. Cause it's
funny. It's kind of like a taking my ball and going home attitude though. Right. I finally won one game. I'm good. I'm never playing you again.
Exactly.
So I bested you 100 times. I win the last game we'll ever play.
Right. it's like the child's way out. You know, I'm done. Yeah. No playing again. Yeah.
Right. But it's done so well. And I know I read an article that they redid this story in a Batman series, but I cannot find it. And so I want to find it because I know I read that. I was like, oh, I want to go read that. And then now I can't find it. So it's like either I'm making it up in my own mind because I want him to do it with Batman, or someone was relaying the initial story that Demodis, is it Demodis? How do you say it? How do you say his name? Demodis. You know, the writer.
Demodis.
Yeah. Maybe they're recounting his story with how he wanted to do it with the Joker and Batman, which would be amazing too. But I'm glad they did it with Spider-Man.
No, it makes more sense being Spider-Man and Kraven, because Joker killing Batman would, unless they were, like you said, unless they were spending the time going down the rabbit hole of how this mentally affected Joker in a bad way, it'd be out of character, because Joker's not going to kill Batman.
Right. I've read online because, I mean, you know my feelings about the story. I think it's the best one in all the comic books for Spider-Man. I think this is the pinnacle of what a character like that can be like or provide a backdrop for.
Right.
Did a little research and listened to some people's reviews, and I found that either people really like it, think it's one of the best, or they don't like it. The people who don't like it, it's more about the fact that it's too dark to be a Spider-Man story.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's dark.
And a part of me is like, well, that's what makes it so good, because if it's not dark, you're not developing the character any more than what he is.
Right.
And you have to have stories like this that create depth.
Exactly. If you look at any series, any long-running series, you look at the storylines that are considered to be the best storylines or be the ones that people should read, they're the ones that break the norm. They're the ones that take the status quo of what you're used to being in that comic book and twist it a little bit. Like this one took, in my opinion, what this one did is it took you're used to reading Spider-Man stories. Spider-Man's, you know, generally a happier character. He's making quips, making jokes all the time, doing his thing. And they took it and they dropped it down to be darker, removed Spider-Man from it, and replaced him.
Yeah.
I mean,
see, because if I was a writer, if I was a comic writer, and they said, hey, we want you to write Spider-Man, I would be reading these types of storylines, and I would incorporate the fear that he, because, you know, now he should have a fear of tight spaces, a fear of the dark in some ways, you know, especially in a tight spot. And I would use that, you know? I would call that back and have him have a panic attack and be like, oh my God. And then all these images start coming back of what happened during this time. And then that would be cool. I think that would be like, oh, all of a sudden now your character has flaws and can become more relatable in a way that's not there most of the time.
Right. I don't know. I haven't, as you know, I haven't read much Spider-Man stuff. I've read a couple stories here and there, but, of the ones I have read, this one's very different, you know, like we said, for those reasons.
Right. Well, you like Maximum Carnage, but that's a typical Spider-Man story.
It is.
I mean, it's different because you have the Casey, is that his name? The Red Carnage guy?
Cassidy.
Because he isn't it the whole concept is him and Eddie were in jail, right? And a piece of Venom connects in with Cassidy.
Yeah, Carnage is a spawn of Venom. I think it was an experiment. They took part of Venom's body. I think I'm gonna look it up. I haven't read that story since the 90s.
Well, there you go. But Spider-Man through that story is still a pretty much a typical Spider-Man, right?
Right. I liked it because it was Spider-Man and Venom had to team up.
Oh,
yeah, Cletus Cassidy was the guy before he was Carnage.
Right. And he's just insane, right?
Yeah, he's just completely insane. He's a serial killer, yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's a good review of Kraven's Last Hunt. Go read it.
Yeah, the symbiote for Carnage mutated in his blood and then made him red and Carnage, and they did a 14-part story arc, which I think was all over everything. Spider-Man.
Of course. Oh, all Spider-Man titles?
Yeah, Spider-Man Unlimited, Web of Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man.
Yeah, you know what? In the late 80s and into the 90s, Spider-Man as a comic book character in the comic books got really big. I mean, he's always going to be big, but they had an explosion of titles.
Yeah, they had five ongoing titles at this time in 1993 for Spider-Man.
Yeah, and through the 80s, it was just three. It was Amazing Spider-Man, Peter Parker, Spectacular Spider-Man, and Web of Spider-Man. But right. Web ended after, like, not very many issues. I want to say like 80-some issues. It wasn't like, I don't think it made it to 100 issues.
No, it did. It made 129.
It was 129? It was close.
129,
that's your favorite number.
Shut up. with two annuals. But yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Do they do annuals very much anymore? I don't remember.
DC does.
I see them every once in a while.
I don't think.
Like, there was a Thor annual last year.
Maybe they do. I mean, they don't, I don't know. Sometimes like with New 52.
Maybe it should be religious.
Right. The first year for New 52 for DC, they did annuals. I think the second year they skipped it, and the third year they did them again. It's like New 52 is 5 years long, but they didn't do five annuals for the comics, you know?
Right.
And not all comics get annuals. I did too, because they were just taking the character stuff for that year, pulling it out of the main continuity and telling fun stories.
Yeah, and they'd be longer, you know what I mean? They'd be a little bit more expensive, but not too much more. And
right.
They'd be a thick, but you'd get like twice the comic.
Yeah,
so, I miss that. I wish they would do something more like that.
And they do. They just don't do them very often. Speaking of things they should do again, we should talk about go back to Marvel Legacy again. Talk about the renumbering. I tagged you in a post today on Facebook about the numbering for Hulk.
Yeah, I didn't get what you were saying with the number 1 through 6 because I thought they had.
Hold on, let me pull it up.
I didn't understand what you're saying. I mean, okay. I saw it. I read it.
So Incredible Hulk had its first issue. They had its first 6 issues as Grey Hulk, and then Hulk went into Tales to Astonish. Right.
Okay, so they had. Let me repeat what you just said. The first 6 issues was the Hulk or the Incredible Hulk. Was it just
Correct.
The Hulk?
It was Incredible Hulk.
The Incredible Hulk, and he was gray.
Right.
I don't know if some people might not know that, but he was gray at the very, very, very beginning.
He was gray because it would cost too much because it was more expensive to print green.
And then they went into the Tales to Astonish, and he became green, and he was green from there on out. But they stopped the Incredible Hulk at number 6.
Right, so here's what they did. So originally they did Incredible Hulk 1 through 6. He went in the Tales to Astonish. Tales to Astonish. He went. He was in Tales to Astonish like for like 58 issues with Submariner, I think it was. And then at issue 101, they ended Tales to Astonish and they started Incredible Hulk at 102. So Incredible Hulk took over the Tales to Astonish numbering right there. So what
so
Marvel?
You have Hulk 1 through 6, then Tales to Astonish up to 101.
Right.
And then Incredible Hulk started up again at 102.
Correct. In 1968. Yeah.
Wow.
So, but what Marvel Legacy, they're trying to go back and they're going through counting all their series and starting not new, but going back to the old numbering, right? But for Incredible Hulk, what they've done is they have ignored Incredible Hulk 1 through 6, not in their counting system at all. Just ignored it. Instead, they've taken all of Tales to Astonish 1 through 101, which he's only in about a little more than half of those issues, and counted that as the first 101 issues. And then Incredible Hulk 102 through 474 is counted. And then the 1999 Hulk series 1 through 11 count as 475 through 485. Incredible Hulk in 2000, which was issue number 12 through 112, because they renamed Hulk to Incredible Hulk, counts for issues 486 through 586, so 100 issues there. And then in 08, they restarted Hulk again. So 1 through 12 of that series counts as 587 through 598. And then in 2009, a year later, this is what I'm talking about with Marvel. Fuck them. A year later, they restarted it again.
What the fantastic?
But here, listen to this, though. They restarted it again, but they went back at this point in 09. They went back to their old numbering, but they can't count. So issue 599, or issue 600, I mean, that they printed, is actually issue 599, according to this counting. So Incredible Hulk 09 issues 600 through 635 now count as issues 599 through 634. And then 2 years later in 2011, they rebooted again to make Incredible Hulk 1 through 15, which now count for 635 through 649. And then in 2013, so 2 years later, they made Indestructible Hulk issues 1 through 20. Those are now 650 through 669. And then a year later, they rebooted again into Hulk 1 through 16, which now count for 670 through 685. And then in 2016, so 2 years after the reboot of the first one, they made Totally Awesome Hulk, which has had 23 issues, which now count for 686 through 708. So now they're going to make Hulk, Incredible Hulk 709.
Oh, my God. That's just ridiculous.
This is my problem with Marvel. You see how they went? They went up until 1999 with basically one Hulk series. And then since 99, so in the last 17 years, there's been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different Hulk series.
I don't understand. You had tradition of half a century of these numberings, and you go and you do all these reboots and renumber. Okay, fine. But why not in the fine print? You know, when you open up that first page,
right,
and then it's got all that fine. Keep the numbering in that fine print.
Right. They should do that always.
You know what I mean? Because then you can pull it out and say, well, we've been keeping track of the numbers the whole time, and we're actually on this issue. Because, like, I don't know if you remember, like, in, I think it was 2014, they did the 700th issue of Spider-Man.
Yep.
They did the same garbage. And it's just like, I mean, if unless you've kept track in some fashion, like how I just suggested, then really, if you want to restart with the legacy numbers, you should just start after the last issue that you stopped printing. So if
right.
your last printed number was 399, your next one would be 400. And
right, they want to count all the stuff in between, which I honestly don't blame them. They and part of me thinks, yes, it should be counted, because if they hadn't renumbered and rebooted, those would have been the Hulk issues or whatever issues of storyline they're going for. But this right here, this shows the problem with rebooting your series every 2 years. I mean, in less than 20 years, they've rebooted 8 times. Yeah. 8 freaking times.
Yeah, they should be shot for that kind of stuff. Because it's just lame, especially people who collect like us that want to have, you know what I mean? That it's kind of cool to go back and you're meeting somebody who's 19 years old and he's or 15 years old or whatever, you know, a younger kid that's into the, you know, just started collecting, and you like show him your collection and you're back on, you know, number 100 all the way to 393, and he's excited because he has 393 to 400 or something. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, this rebooting they've done, it really destroys like you said, the collector mentality. It's like, you know, having number one doesn't mean anything anymore. Oh, I have Hulk number one. Okay, which one do you have? You know,
what volume do you have?
Right. Well, what's dumb is a lot of these reboots here. It's the story is continuing over, or like this. It's not like a whole new thing. The story. It's the same Hulk. It's the same story.
They can stuff though.
Yeah, right? they do.
They canon a lot of stuff when they reboot.
Oh, they do. Everything is canon. They don't take things out of canon when they reboot. It's all the same. And what's irritating is like people gave DC so much shit in 2011 for doing New 52, for, you know, doing the reboot thing, and then so much shit for Rebirth too. And it's like, okay, that's fine. But how many times has Marvel freaking done this shit? And it's confusing as hell.
Right. Right. Wait.
I just wish they'd pick their fucking number and stay with it.
With DC's renumbering, you said they did it for, was it Crisis?
So for Crisis, what they did in 87, they did the whole Crisis of the Earth.
Flash number one.
Right.
But that Flash series gave us Zoom, I think it was, right?
It gave us Zoom. It gave us, Professor Zoom. It gave us Impulse. It gave us a bunch of stuff. Yeah, I mean, there was good stuff in that series. But
some good stuff
also.
But wait, let me finish my thought.
Okay.
So you have Crisis, and then some renumbering happened. Then you have the New 52. But didn't they do a renumbering between New 52 and the Rebirth when they collapsed the multiverse? Didn't that restart a bunch of titles?
That was Crisis. Crisis collapsed multiverse.
But that was in the 80s, right?
87.
No. They just did a collapse of the multiverse 2 years ago.
Right, they brought it back. So there was a multiverse, right? DC had an infinite number of worlds with all these crazy stories. They decided, no, we want to tell tighter stories in one main universe. Crisis on Infinite Earths happened. All the universes came together. Big
Infinite Crisis or something like that?
Infinite Crisis happened a little while. Yeah, so I'll get to that. So Crisis on Infinite Earths happened. Barry Allen sacrificed himself to stop the worlds from ending. Then we had basically Earth Prime, right, which was our Earth, or the main Earth of the DC universe. Then that's when Superman rebooted with John Byrne taking over, Flash rebooted, Green Lantern rebooted, Wonder Woman rebooted. Batman did not reboot. Batman stayed the same.
Right.
Action stayed the same. Detective stayed the same. And some other series stayed similar. But the other members that weren't Batman, they all got rebooted. Some series got new series. They introduced new characters. Flash forward to the early 2000s, they did Infinite Crisis, which was similar but different. It was they had slowly been introducing back in the multiverse, and they brought them, then they got rid of them again. And then in the New 52, they did Multiversity, I think it was, where they reintroduced all the different parallel Earths, because there's a lot of fun to be having in those storylines. But you also got to remember that between those, the two big reboots in DC Universe, right, the 87 and 2011, that's a 24-year gap in reboots, you know?
Right.
Now,
right.
They did have series that were like, you know, for that time frame, you know, Wonder Woman stayed the same, right? There was a 2009, like they ended Wonder Woman, brought it back to number 109, and then put it back to normal numbering after like 30 issues, something like that. They put it back to that original numbering. They did that. But like Superman and Flash and those series, they didn't reboot them at number ones at all in that 24-year period. Right. Green Lantern did get rebooted, but because Green Lantern, they changed Green Lantern. I don't know if you know much about how that series went, but only the first 50 issues dealt with Hal Jordan. After that, Green Lantern was Kyle Reiner for the next 200 issues or so. Wow. Same with Flash. Flash wasn't Barry Allen. Flash was Wally West for all those issues. So when they brought back Hal Jordan and they brought back Barry Allen, they did Green Lantern Rebirth and Flash Rebirth, and then those two series just started back at number one because it was the original character coming back to the storyline where the last 20 years had been other characters.
Because people like those characters.
Oh, I love Kyle Reiner.
Yeah, but Kyle Reiner, is he the black guy that's
no that's military? John Stewart. That's John Stewart.
I like John Stewart.
Yeah, Kyle Reiner was an artist. I thought
his attitude for what the Green Lantern is supposed to be was more spot on than Hal Jordan.
Right. So Kyle Reiner was like, he was an artist. He's the White Lantern. He's the one who can hold all the rings, right? But
have you seen the new character that they introduced?
The new Green Lantern?
No, it's not a Green Lantern. He's a lantern, but it's like all the colors or something like that.
So all the colors lantern is the White Lantern, who is Kyle Reiner. Or Reiner, I pronounce it either way.
It was just a couple months ago they introduced a new Lantern guy. I have it. I'll look it up. I'm not a big Green Lantern fan. I mean, I liked John Stewart because I just thought he was a cool. I just liked the attitude, how they portrayed his attitude, you know.
Right.
But I don't know, man. The whole power ring thing, and then they're making
constructs
of their power ring.
So I love.
I don't know. I think as an artist, I'd probably like that because, you know, right. You can do whatever you want. But when I'm reading it, I just like, I'm already in a suspended state of disbelief.
Right.
And it just pushes it too much for me.
Well, what gets me, so I like Green Lantern, but Green Lantern became really popular when they did Blackest Night, Brightest Day, or Brightest Day, I can't remember what order they went in, but the Brightest Day, Blackest Night storylines, which are two really big DC Universe storylines that focus on all the Green Lantern stuff, brought in the other characters as well, like Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman are all in it and stuff. Basically, after they brought Hal Jordan back and Jeff Johns took over Green Lantern, became super popular with these storylines. And if you haven't read them, if you haven't read, you know, Brightest Day, Blackest Night, or Blackest Night, Brightest Day, you should. But you should also realize you're giving yourself a commitment because you're going to be reading a lot of books, but it's well worth it. It's one of the better, larger stories to be put out by either company in the last like 20 years, right?
Oh.
It's, and I mean more than 20 issue story. It's a huge event because
right.
it has its own series. It crosses over into all the Green Lantern titles. There's they released a bunch of like character specific mini series for it. Like Wonder Woman has a Blackest Night issues 1-3 storyline, which deals with just her during Blackest Night and all this stuff. But if you read the whole thing, you're looking at like, I don't know, maybe 100 issues to read. I'm just guessing. I don't honestly know. But it's a big read. I mean, it's really good, especially if you read all the supplemental stuff. You get this really big universe. I mean, it leads up into Flash's Flashpoint, which leads up into New 52. It's really good.
Right.
And
check it out.
That's kind of where they introduced all the other Lantern Corps.
You read Kraven's Last Hunt, so I think I'll have to read Kingdom Come.
Oh, Kingdom Come. Yeah, we'll do it. Yeah, we can talk about that one because that's so good.
Well, that'll be the next one I'll read. I'm actually going back and reading Wolverine again, the miniseries.
Oh, that's a good one too.
It's pretty good. I mean,
it's not as good as people make it out to be, though.
No, because it's definitely dated, you know. And I think people my age would always enjoy it because they read it, especially if they're you know, geeks like you and I that read it back then, probably still like it because it was such a groundbreaking character. Really, I don't know. They did the movie based off of it loosely, but I didn't realize that the scene with the bear in the movie is in the comic book, and it's not exactly the same, but it's pretty close, and it's pretty good. And it made me appreciate the movie actually a little bit more, you know what I mean?
Right.
Reading the comic book, I'm like, wow, this is so dated. But reading Kraven's Last Hunt and comparing the two, like, I feel like that Spider-Man story will stand the test of time. Right?
Right.
I'll be 60 years old and I'll read it and I'll be like, that's still a really good story. Where Wolverine is kind of like, oh, it's really dated.
It is dated. And I think that miniseries gets more praise than it actually deserves as far as being revolutionary for Wolverine. I actually think...
It's just because of the character.
Right. I actually think the stuff Larry Hama did in the mid-run of Wolverine, the like 30s through 50s, somewhere in there, is actually more telling to building that character up for what he eventually became.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just looked it up. To read all of Brightest Day,
yeah,
you're reading roughly 150 issues of comics to get the whole,
holy
get
crap,
all of it. Now there's 25 issues in the main story. But if you want to read all the supplemental books and all the books it ties into, it's 150 issues.
You know, I was just thinking, now that I really think about it, I don't really mind the reboots as long as it's for creating consistency in the timelines. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because you have so, I mean, you think about it, how many writers have written for Superman or written for Batman or written or written for the X-Men. It's rare that you have somebody like a Claremont that was on it for 10 years or 15 years or whatever it was.
Right. Now, see, I don't know. I still don't like it. It still bothers me.
Maybe a better way of doing it would be using the annuals to retcon stuff and to fix timelines.
Yeah, I that'd be fine. I just think I'm a firm believer that if you have a series with a character that's a legacy character or a character that's stood the test of time and is still around 10, 20 years later, when you're doing a disservice to your fans and to your character by constantly rebooting number one and starting new series.
Yeah, yeah, that's
don't,
true. That's true.
You know, it's much. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I would say it's much more beneficial to everybody involved if the main comic has, you know, numbers that make sense, right?
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's so funny. We always talk about, well, maybe we should talk about this. We always end up talking about comic books because we just love it. We just love the medium so much that we want it to do well. We want people to be into it and not go, oh, you read comic books? You're a dork. It's like, really, if you actually sat and read some of these books, you'll be blown away.
There's some
great stuff. And it's a real, I mean, that form, I mean, you can go back to cave paintings and picture form of art. What I mean art by storytelling through pictures, you know, I mean, that goes on and on for a long time. But I believe the whole superhero and what DC and Marvel and Image to a point and DC's Vertigo line and all them really are a real true American type of art form. You know what I mean? I put it up there with jazz, right? Where
it is.
You get that sense of what happens is it's unique, you know, and you can. It's not the same as watching TV or watching a movie or even reading a book because it's taking a visual media and a writing, a literature media, you know, text is what I'm trying to say there, and putting those two together in a way that just, I don't know, the stuff that you can convey is just different. And
it is. It's the same reason why you won't have a comic book that translates perfectly to a movie,
yeah,
right? Or a comic book, the transfer to a book.
I know you could do it because, I mean, you kind of have your setup for every shot. Like M. Night Shyamalan, who me and my brother always say is Shyamalan a Ding Dong because we love his name. I mean, we really love his name. That's why we say that. He produces a comic for every movie that he shoots. That's how he sets his shots up.
Well, yeah, because storyboarding.
Comic form. They storyboard it out. And that's what you're doing is you're storyboarding it out. But, you know, I kind of liked it when I thought about like the X-Men when they did the movies and everybody was, and there was, hardcore group that was upset about the costumes, right?
I know, I remember that.
But I was like, man, you can't do those, because I'm sorry, Wolverine's costume, whether yellow, black, or brown, would look ridiculous.
So here's the thing. You just couldn't
take it seriously.
You couldn't do that 18 years ago when that came out. But I honestly think now, in the state that comic book movies are now, you could do a version of that costume, and people would accept it.
You think? I don't know, man. I'm thinking about seeing it on screen, and he's larger than life, and... You know they're going to do an X-Men movie back in the 80s. You know who was supposed to be Wolverine?
Who?
Danny DeVito. You think about it.
He's the right height.
He's perfect for that role. He's got great attitude, right? He's got that very distinct voice, and he's the right height, and he's stocky, and he would have been perfect for it.
It's kind of funny.
It's hilarious.
That would have been great. I'd watch.
Jackman is like what?
He's 6'2".
Like 10 feet tall, you know what I mean? Comparatively to what Wolverine's supposed to be. Wolverine is short and stocky.
Yep.
Not some, you know, and now you look at comic books, he's tall. He's tall. He's taller because the movie has influenced the comic book, and it's the way around.
After they did the movie, they did New X-Men, like 113 it was, where they put all the X-Men into basically the movie costumes.
Yeah.
I was like, ugh. I mean, fine, but come on.
Yeah. Well, it's
Marvel's bad about taking what they do in the movies and putting it in the comic books. Like,
well, Marvel is
turning it back.
Yeah, Marvel does too much. They play the PC game too much.
Right.
They make things there to appease a large groups of people, and some of it makes sense. Like some of that kind of stuff makes sense. Like the Marvel, what makes Miss Marvel, right? It's not. It can move from character to character.
Right.
Correct. Am I right in saying that? That the power of Miss Marvel doesn't always have to stay with whoever it is.
No. The current Miss Marvel is Kamala Khan, who's a shapeshifter, and she took up the name Miss Marvel when Carol Danvers.
I think you're right.
Yeah, Carol. Yeah, okay, because her and Supergirl have the same last name, which is really weird, because Kara Danvers and Carol Danvers.
Yeah, when
she became Captain Marvel, Kamala Khan was a huge fan of her.
Took
up the name Miss Marvel in like honor of her. She's a totally different character, totally different power set, but took the name Miss Marvel and made it her own.
Because I thought Miss Marvel got her power from like an alien.
She got her powers from Captain Marvel through some sort of rape and rebirth. It's really, really sticky how it happened.
No,
she was raped. I believe she was raped, or she had coerced sex with an alien.
I have that title. Remember, I sent it to you, and you're like, I was like, this is really weird. That's the one where the guy is from like another dimension, and
then
he gets her to go to his dimension or something, and then he rapes her, and then she comes back. And then she gives birth to him, and then they fall in love, and then they get married or something.
That's not how she gets powers. She gets powers from Captain Marvel. Her powers come from the male Captain Marvel.
Okay. Yeah, but they killed him off, right? He's dead. He's gone.
Yeah, he wasn't popular, so they killed him off. You know, did you know that Carol Danvers?
He's never come back.
No, he has not.
She was much more popular.
She's more popular back in the 70s with her title Miss Marvel. I mean.
Yeah. Well, she's so. The point is, the point I'm saying that he's never come back, because it's rare that a comic book character doesn't come back after dying.
Right, unless you're Uncle Ben.
There's only Uncle Ben and maybe Captain Marvel.
Batman's parents. Who else
has Batman's parents? But they kind of brought back Thomas Wayne.
In Infinite Crisis.
In a multiverse.
I mean, yeah, but still. But
they still bring him into storylines.
It's true. Although it would be so cool if they did a Thomas Wayne Batman movie with Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who played Thomas Wayne in BVS as Batman. That'd be so badass.
He could totally do it. Yeah.
He actually somebody asked him about it, and he says like, "Fuck, I'll do it. Whatever."
Yeah, he'll do whatever, you know.
Which he was the comedian in Watchmen, right?
Yep. He's a comedian in Watchmen. He's in The Walking Dead right now.
Negan.
As Negan.
He was he's the dad on Supernatural.
Yeah, he was the dad on Supernatural the first season, and he came back for like a third season, I think. And that was
he's good. He's a good actor. I like him.
Yeah, he's really good. He's like one of the guys that he's in a movie. You're like, okay, well, I'll watch it if Dean Martin's in it.
If
I'll give it a chance.
if they end up doing Flashpoint in the DC movies, and if they did a section where it was like talking about, you know, the Thomas Wayne section as Batman, and they got him to do it, that'd be just such fan service. It'd be cool.
Dude, I was excited for Flashpoint on The Flash, the TV show, and then they did it, and I was just like,
it wasn't the same.
It was such a letdown. I mean, it was still cool for because they only can only do so much. But
yeah, it was still cool.
At the same time, it's like it's such a major event in comic book history. You know,
if you watch the cartoon, the cartoon's pretty good. The cartoon movie they did.
Oh yeah. The movie was pretty good. Yeah, but they could bring in. They didn't have to worry about licensing. And they didn't have to worry about all that stuff, right? They could bring in everybody. That's the one thing Warner Brothers really has a good key over Marvel is they didn't sell out all their characters.
Well, they do put embargoes on characters. Like for the longest time, there was an embargo on Batman ever being on a TV show because of the Batman movies, as well as Superman. Like they didn't want, even with Smallville, they didn't want him in costume for various reasons. But they didn't want Superman on screen because they were working on Superman movies. They didn't want Batman on screen on TV screens because they were doing Batman movies. They didn't want confusion. But with the success of Flash and Green Arrow and their decision to not integrate those two shows, which they should have, into the DC movies, from what I've heard is since they added Superman to Supergirl, they've greenlit basically them to use any characters they want in that universe.
Dude, I got to tell you, man, when we finally go and watch Justice League and we see the guy playing the Flash, I'm sure I'll enjoy it. Right. You know what I mean? But I just can't help but go, why the hell are you not just using Grant Gustav, who is amazing as the Flash. You have a built-in audience that already loves him.
Yeah.
And he's a great actor. He has a multitude of talents. He can sing, he can dance, he can act serious. He's believable as the Flash already.
Right.
Why would you not use him? I don't understand. And incorporate that into the TV show to a level that makes sense.
Even if they didn't want to include the TV show at all and just make it different, just still use him. He's great. He's so.
But they don't have to incorporate into the TV show itself. I'm just saying having the elements that the same timeline and they can still talk about it on the TV show. You know what I mean? And say, you know, kind of like when he takes off and he's in Supergirl's multiverse universe.
Right.
You know, there's just so much you could do with it. It doesn't make any sense, and I think they're just missing because Marvel's killing them on movies, but they're holding their own on TV. I still don't think they're at the level of like what Netflix is doing, right? Because Netflix Daredevil is ridiculously good.
If you don't count Jessica Netflix Jones. Shows, yeah, if you don't count Netflix shows, DC is killing Marvel on TV shows. Right. On broadcast TV,
dude, but as far as quality, this year's Gotham,
I did not. I haven't even finished season one of Gotham.
Oh my god, dude! It is so fun. Much fun, and they're getting ready. I mean, it's got to be coming close. If they don't do it in the next 2 years, they got to be getting ready to do year one. He is so close.
There's actually a fun fan theory that people are throwing around about Gotham that I read that it's not actually the tale of Batman; it's the tale of Owlman. From the crime syndicate.
Yeah, no, but all right.
That he's actually growing to be the evil Bruce Wayne.
Well, they introduced the clone already. The evil Bruce Wayne is already there.
Right? No, not like that. But I'm saying like it's a fan. It's not real. It's a fan theory, right? But just saying instead of him growing up to become Batman, he's going to grow up to become Owlman with the crime syndicate versus with the Justice League. It's an interesting read.
Yeah, it's interesting, but no way. Because it's so much fun.
I need to watch it.
The guy playing the Riddler is so good.
Yeah.
And the guy playing the Penguin, even though he's not fat, you're just like, he's so good.
Right. You know? I was worried at first. Like, I was like, why is this guy not fat? Penguin's supposed to be short and fat, not tall and lanky, but it works. It worked.
Right. Well, yeah, because the actor's so good.
Yeah, the actor's great. And like the whole cast is, I mean, I've only watched the first probably 2/3 of the first season. So I'm almost done with the first season, and I really enjoyed it.
I don't think you should worry so much about somebody's skin color in the movies, right? Because if the best person, the best actor for the role is whoever he is, then that's who you should use.
You know? The only time I disagree with that is if the person's skin color and ethnicity plays a part in who the character is, right? Like Black Panther is the king of a country in Africa. He shouldn't be an Asian guy or a white guy, right? Like, yeah, but that's very rare. But if the backstory of the character involves a certain place, the character should probably be from that place. But otherwise, you know, anything else, I mean, who gives a shit if they're white, black, Asian, Mexican? Who cares? If they're the best for the role, that's fine. Only, you know,
there's only a few characters that I can't have them change their background or their ethnicity. I just can't.
Right.
I can't see them changing Superman.
No.
I just can't. I mean, would I like riot or cry about it? No. You know what I mean? And
no, I'd still watch it. I'd still watch it,
and I'd probably really enjoy it. You know what I mean?
Right.
But Superman Clark Kent from Kansas, and he's a white guy.
Right.
You know, just for lack of a better term. And the same like with Peter Parker. You know, everybody's like, oh, have you read Ultimate Spider-Man with Morales? Oh. I'm like, he's not Spider-Man.
It's a different Spider-Man. It's really different.
But it's not Spider-Man. You can't call him Spider-Man. You call him a different character. He can have similar powers, and he could be just as badass. You know what I mean? But Peter Parker is Spider-Man. That's it. There's only one Spider-Man. There's only one Batman. There's only one, you know what I mean? Like, the only one I don't have a problem with it is with, like, Wolverine and X-23 being called Wolverine, because that's his daughter.
Right.
That doesn't bother me. You know what I mean?
Right.
But one Spider-Man, there's one Batman, there's one Superman. And to me, those are the big three, you know?
I think replacing Peter Parker without a reason is pointless. Same with Batman. But the idea of a legacy name, like, Batman spends his life telling, you know, his power is not in him. His power is in the fear that creates of the Batman, right? So him passing on the name of Batman to, you know, Dick Grayson or to Damian Wayne, and there being a new Batman, you know, that makes sense to me of passing the legacy down to the next generation of the Batman.
Which is not doing any more Bruce Wayne stories.
Right, exactly. Which is how you got Miles Morales. I don't think you've read it, but how you got Miles Morales Spider-Man is Peter Parker died in Ultimate Spider-Man, and Miles Morales took up the mantle of Spider-Man in honor of Peter Parker with these new powers he had got. Like, it wasn't like there was two Spider-Man. Yeah, it's really good. It wasn't like there was two Spider-Man. It's like, oh, I'm Spider-Man too. I mean, there is now because Marvel's put them in the same universe. Now there's Miles Morales Spider-Man and Peter Parker Spider-Man and Spider-Gwen and Ben Reilly's Scarlet Spider and all this whatever.
Right, the Spider-Verse. But
originally it was Peter Parker died in Ultimate Spider-Man 160 or something like that. And Miles Morales was like, oh, shit. And it was like, I'll be Spider-Man now.
That's interesting. I mean, if they did a movie and they retconned and made Peter Parker a black kid from Detroit, and they went through, or New York, or even New York, because you can't take Spider-Man out of New York.
No, but you can't.
Made him from Harlem, and they did the whole thing. I actually wouldn't have a problem with that because he's still Peter Parker.
Yeah, I'd watch the shit out of that. That sounds, I mean,
hell yeah, it would be interesting, and it'd be cool to watch it from a totally different perspective.
Right, because Spider-Man's built on his tragedy. Spider-Man is built on the fact that he is a nobody trying to be a somebody and wants so hard to be recognized, but also doesn't all at the same time.
That would actually be really fun. They should do that. How many people would they piss off?
A lot.
It'd be awesome.
Well, you know, back in the 90s or 2000s, they were trying to get Will Smith to be Superman, and he was like, nope, you don't fuck with a white guy as Superman.
Yeah, that would be the hardest one, right?
I would still watch it. I mean, if he doesn't wear a mask.
If Superman wore a mask, I think it'd be easier for people to deal with.
Right, but he's out in the open.
He's out in the open, and his look is very iconic.
Right. Well, and you know with Superman, Clark Kent is his mask. Superman is who he is. He's the reverse of every other superhero, pretty much.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean,
John Jones.
Yeah.
John Jones the same way. Any alien is the same way.
Right. But yeah,
but I think it would be interesting. That would be an interesting concept. You should draw it out and write it out. You should write it out, dude, and submit that idea to Marvel.
Yeah, because I'm so talented on comic books.
Well, you can do it. Don't downgrade yourself. People don't know. Jay, John, Johnny does art.
Oh, pick a name. Pick a name.
He does comic books. He's done covers. You did your own web comic for how long? How many years did Y2CO last?
I did 11 web comics over the span of 13 years.
11 web comics in the span of 13 years. So fuck off that you can't write a story where you retcon. Seriously, you could do almost everything in Harlem and make Peter get bit and have this whole thing and have that whole concept go through. And maybe you're not the right person to write it. Maybe we find somebody with the right ethnicity background that can write it from that point of view that would make more sense.
Yeah,
but I could definitely draw the shit out of it.
Right. I think that'd be a great story. But I think you're right. Someone with the background of New York, Harlem, that kind of that mindset would be better to write that story. Right. But yeah,
we don't want to say a black writer, but a black writer.
No, I'll say a black writer because definitely if you're trying to make Spider-Man a black kid,
we're
Harlem,
just two white guys
sense.
Talking about shit we don't understand.
Right. I have like one or two black friends.
But dude, to be fair, we grew up in an area where there was not.
I went to a high school where it was a 7 through 12 high school, so there was a lot of people there, and there was two black families.
Oh, dude, I went to Fairview Junior High, and there was like literally like four or five black kids, and you'd hear somebody get beat up, and you'd be like, so and so come to the office because they just said he was black, and they just assume it was the same guy every time.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had.
I mean, to be fair, a lot of times it was. Right. But it was. I mean, it's, you know, it's just where we grew up. I mean, what are you gonna do?
I think in total there was maybe less than 15 black kids. I mean, there was more Asians and Latinos in my school than there was black kids. There wasn't a lot.
What school did you go to?
Calhoun in Silverdale, Washington. I mean, it was a.
Calhoun.
Yeah, it's like in a small school? Area. No, it's public.
I don't even remember that one.
It opened after you're out of school. It opened in 1997.
Oh yeah, I was already graduated.
Yeah, I was the first class to go through 10th, 11th, and 12th grade there.
Interesting.
I mean, it was still a very. There? I'm here.
No, I said, is it still there?
Oh yeah, it's still there. My nephew actually graduated from there too.
Oh, that's cool.
Wait, no, he didn't. He graduated from North Kitsap, but he went there for a while.
I graduated at Olympic High School.
Nice. Hey, my wife did too.
I know. People who don't know. Johnny's wife is my niece.
That she is. Now they know.
So we are actually family, not just buddies.
We're both.
Yeah.
Family first, then became buddies over a love of nerd stuff and comics.
Exactly. Which I think probably helped you like ingratiate yourself into the family going, somebody else who loves what I love.
somebody I can talk to. What is cool, though, I remember years and years ago after I first got married to Kaylee, went to a Thanksgiving or a Christmas or a something at your brother's house, and I was talking about my book, you know, like, and I had mentioned it. I think Trish had mentioned it to you, and you had bought the book off Amazon. I was like, "You actually bought the book?"
Yeah, I wanted to support you.
I was like,
"Yeah, I wanted to support you." Yeah, it was cracking me up. I mean, you got a guy on there like almost every other panel is whacking off on the couch, and I was like, "Oh my God, this is hilarious!"
It's under a blanket. It's fine.
I know, but it's so funny. It's so funny.
Yeah,
how's it going getting all this content? I mean, you've been working on your Ainz anthology now for what, a year?
March. I started in March of this year.
Oh, only 3 months?
Yeah. So I've been.
You've got a lot done then.
Yeah. Well, I've had the concept for a while, but I actually started doing it in March of this year when I started like getting writers and working on artwork and stuff. As far as content goes, I had to stop the Ainz project. I think I mentioned this last time too, but I had to work on this 6-page short for Hellcat Press, which I have today's the last day to finish it up, and I have one page left to draw, and I've laid the panels out, but I haven't actually drawn anything yet. So I should be drawing that instead of doing this, but I wanted to do this because it's fun.
Well, plus we're trying to build something here, but you should be able to finish tonight, right?
Oh yeah, I'll get this over. I'll do dinner with the kids real quick, and then tuck them into bed, and I'll just stay up all night doing it. Because I don't have to work tomorrow.
And then you have to submit it to by tomorrow? Is that the deal? Is that why you
I have to get
tonight?
It off. I have to get it to the publisher by tomorrow, so they can get it off to the printers. And then
I mean, you're saying Hellcat Press, but is it Hellcat Press? I want to make sure I say it right.
Yeah, Hellcat Press is the publisher, and the book is called Tales from the Public Domain. I believe it releases in August of this year. So they're doing it's a quick turnaround. So everybody gets their books in, their stories in.
Well, What genre?
It's all. I believe it's all suspense and horror. The whole book. The story I'm doing is very much horror, but it's suspense and horror books. I think or stories.
Tales from the Public Domain. That's an interesting title.
Yeah, because what the whole concept of the book is the writers took characters that are in public domain and then told new tales on them, pretty much.
So, okay, so they took characters that are in the public domain. Like Frankenstein's monster.
Frankenstein, right? Or Tarzan or something like that.
Right. That is interesting.
So the one I'm working on is a Robert E. Kelly story that deals with a voodoo man. I don't think I've actually read the story that it's based off of, or the character it's based off of, but it's a Robert E. Howard created Conan and Crawl the Conqueror.
Right, right. There's a movie about him.
Yeah.
With Vincent D'Onofrio.
Is there?
Yeah, released back in the 90s.
Nice. Yep.
He was a crazy kind of... He wasn't a healthy mental person.
Well, have you read Conan?
I love those books, man. Conan is one of my favorite characters ever developed. He's just such a fun character to read about.
Actually, speaking of Conan, I remember being at your house years ago, sitting on the couch watching you play Conan on Xbox.
I loved that game. That was a fun game.
Oh, I know. I actually bought it for the PS3 because of watching you play it for like 4 hours.
So Hellcat Press has facebook.com/Hellcat Press. So you can go there. They have hellcatpress.tumblr.com.
Yeah. And
it looks like they have twitter.com/Hellcat_Press.
Yep.
And they are devoted exclusively to horror-themed comic book anthologies.
There you go.
So very interesting. Go check it out. It looks like it'd be a fun read. When does it come out? Do you know?
I believe it comes out in the middle of next month, in August. It'll be actually published and printed. I should have copies of it before I go to Rose City Comic Con in Portland in September to have. I'm gonna get a couple of copies to try and to promote and sell at my table.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is you don't see a lot of people with actual websites anymore.
Right,
people they're just all use, Tumblr pages, yeah, or Facebook pages, or. And when we started this podcast, we really wanted to make it not so much unique, but also not be run of the mill either.
Right.
And everything out there says create your own website and put your stuff on your website. And it just seems like such a waste of time when we have a nice Facebook page. Go check it out.
And a SoundCloud account.
And a SoundCloud and YouTube now.
Right. Oh, yeah, we're on YouTube. Great.
Yep, we're on YouTube, and so you can find us everywhere and anywhere without having, we don't need a website.
If you just search Spoiler Country Podcast, you'll find us on all the stuff. We're on Instagram, yeah. We've got Twitter.
We're on Google, we're on iTunes, yep. We're on, we're everywhere.
Yeah.
We've infected the universe.
And like for this podcast, we decided not to make a website because like, why, what's the point? For my other podcast, the Y2CR Radio Podcast I do with Kaylee, we have a website, but really all it is I just have a category on my y2co.net website that I dedicate to the podcast to post like pictures and stuff from the show. But
right,
really I don't need to have, I mean, it's kind of, it doesn't really matter because most people listen off of iTunes or Google Play or SoundCloud or YouTube or something like that. And they're never going to go to the website.
Yeah. Our first episode I think we had more people listen on YouTube than we did on SoundCloud.
Yeah. It's interesting. I thought that was cool too.
Yeah, I was shocked, and I'm hoping that people start to interact more, and because our goal is to have guests that want to talk about stuff.
Conversations.
We don't want to do an interview unless it's for some unknown reason. You know what I mean? Like it's a sponsor, right, or something that we're getting paid to do this interview, so we're going to do an interview. But that's not how we want to do it. We prefer to do a hangout. Come on the air with us. We talk. We go over things. We just talk about stuff that's interesting. If you're pushing something, we'll talk about it as well, but we'll talk about it in a way that just makes more fun. And then, if you have to leave in 20 minutes, you leave in 20 minutes. If you want to stay for 2 hours, then we stay on for 2 hours and we just BS.
Right, exactly. I'd like to do the hangout with any number of, any types of people. I mean, people in the industry, the comics, people in the who make movies, music, people doing music, people who are just fans, people who are scientists, whatever.
Yeah, whatever it is. I mean, there's a couple of people that I'm already interested in asking and coming forward. I'd like to bring somebody on that can talk about a multitude of things. So, keep with us. We hope we get this thing moving in a very forward fashion that can be a lot more fun.
I agree.
Good conversation today.
Fun. Yeah, good. I want to say one more thing before we go, though.
Yeah.
I just want to say that we will be, you and I will both be, and Kaylee as well, my wife, we'll all be in San Diego for San Diego Comic Con coming up in less than 2 weeks.
I know. It's so exciting.
I was going to make some like business cards or something for us to hand out for this podcast, kind of like promote the show down there. that's a great place to promote our show. You get out business cards or something to say, hey, we're a podcast. Check us out.
Yeah. And we're going to go ahead and release more content from this podcast and this channel the whole time we're there. We're going to try to release stuff almost every day.
Yeah, we will. We'll release something every day, whether it be a podcast, videos, pictures.
We're going to have it. We got this USB mic. I can plug it right into the laptop, for God's sake. And we can record the car ride down, which will be stupid, but fun at the same time. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it'll just be more stuff that we'll have. And we're going to release all this stuff. And I think that our adventure down there is hopefully we can pull it along and be able to revisit. How many times did you listen to that podcast we did last week?
Three total. I think I downloaded the file and do it on my phone a couple times.
I did the same thing.
Because I like to listen to make sure, like, hey, how do I sound? Am I saying too much? Do I need to stop stuttering?
Well, I cut out all your so.
Yeah,
I got to the point where I could see the coming in the audio file. I'll just cut that out.
When I edit the other show, I know when people say pauses, there's going to be pauses or ums or buts or likes, because I'm so used to the way people talk on the show. I'm like, all right, and there it is. Snip it out. All right, does this sound good?
Yeah, there'll be some pauses on this one. And I like to get to the point where, you know, we do a live broadcast and then edit it down later.
Right.
But we get that live part as well, because sometimes the rawness is fun and it's more organic.
Well, if we do it live, we can get interaction with people too, which I want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, my dream goal would be one day to do a live podcast, like in front of an audience, and like just do the podcast and take questions and talk about stuff and have people interested and talk back with us, like what we're doing. That'd be like my ultimate goal, would be a live podcast in front of people.
Yeah, this is assuming that we're interesting enough that people actually want to talk to us. But
right, I'm still on the fence.
Yeah, we're still going to assume that people want to talk to us, because, you know, we're that conceited.
No.
Well, I am, damn it.
And on that note.
All right, this is Conceited Kendrick signing out, and we will talk with you guys soon. John, you got anything?
No, nothing I want to say. Just we'll talk to you next week or sooner.
All right, Kendrick and Johnny signing out. Bye-bye. Peace.